We're going to jump into leader. We're going to do the next two sections, and we're going to move pretty quickly. So the section that we're on now is leadership. What I want us to do is we're going to begin with a little exercise. We have a scripture here, 2 Timothy 2, and as we look through it, I'm going to ask a couple questions in regards to it. What do you notice in this passage about leadership, and concerning leadership, what do you not notice? So I'm going to read this. You have it before you, but as I read it, you can either follow along or you could just close your eyes. But two questions: what do you notice about this passage in regards to leadership, and what do you not notice about this passage? Okay, here we go. You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others. Join with me in suffering, like a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No one serving as a soldier gets entangled in civilian affairs, but rather tries to please his commanding officer. Similarly, anyone who competes as an athlete does not receive the victor's crown except by competing according to the rules. The hardworking farmer should be the first to receive a share of the crops. Reflect on what I am saying, for the Lord will give you insight into all of this. Now, he's passing on something to Timothy. He's entrusting to him something. And then he uses some images, and he shares a little bit about what he's entrusting to them. In light of this passage, what do you notice about leadership? They're suffering. Yes, there is suffering. Why do you think that is? Or what are, let me put it this way. What are some different forms of suffering in regards to leadership? Humility, it definitely humbles you. Yeah, like that. The process of going through suffering will humble us. Yeah. Yeah. Sacrifice. Yeah.
Waiting.
Yes. Being misunderstood. As soon as you put yourself out there and you cast a vision, the reason why we're oftentimes misunderstood is because it's easy to acknowledge what already is, but we open ourselves up for criticism because what we're communicating is what is not yet. The president of Denver Seminary goes to Wellspring, and when I was going through that dark night of the soul, he came up to me. He didn't know what was going on, but he could tell something was going on. He came up to me and he said, "There is a weight to leadership, and there is a gift to leadership. Look at the gift." I thought, oh, it's good. It's good. Yeah. Suffering. Raising up leaders is, identifying leaders is hard. Training leaders is super hard. Deploying leaders is even harder. Okay. Risk. Yeah. Okay.
Because there's no sure thing that you're going to get the crop that you planted.
Yes.
I mean, because God may have had a different view.
Yeah. Were you here at the last year's synod? Okay, there was a little presentation on church planting, and we ended it by just focusing on the sovereignty of God and the power of the gospel. And the illustration comes from Ray Anderson, he's gone to be with the Lord. He taught at Fuller, and he has this little book called Unspoken Wisdom. And his father never graduated from a higher than a sixth grade education. And it's one of my favorite little books. But in there, he tells an illustration of illustrations about observing from his father what his father did. And he captured those in a book, and his observations of his father, he gleaned some wisdom from him. And one of the stories goes that when he was a farmer, they planted the seed, they cultivated the seed, and they were about to go to harvest, and it was a bumper crop. And they never had this much crop before. And it was Friday night. He went out with his father to look at the crop. And they were thinking about how great this was. They came back Friday night, Saturday morning, a hailstorm blew through, destroyed the entire crop. Ray Anderson talks about going out with his father to the edge of the field, looking up to his dad and saying, "Now what are we going to do?" And the father says, "We're going to plow it under and prepare for next year." And the word of wisdom, what he gleaned from his father is that we put our faith not in the harvest, but in the seed. We put our trust as church planters in the gospel of Jesus Christ. We don't put our trust in our own abilities. We don't put our trust in the harvest or the success of the church plant. We put our trust in the gospel, and we trust him. So that's a great evaluation with the farmer. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
But Dietrich Bonhoeffer said you define success in the shadow of the cross. And that struck me quite a few years ago that, wow, it isn't in position, it isn't possessions or titles. It's in the shadow of the cross, which in the world's eyes is foolishness, right?
Yes.
And it's a failure.
Yeah. Yes. Let me ask you, if you plant a church and in 5 years that church no longer exists, is that a failure? Why?
Because you put your hope in the seed, and the seed grew, but then something came along to wipe out the...
Yeah. Fruit. Somebody said maybe, depends. Nathaniel.
Well, if you like killed yourself over it, and like introduced some kind of just hell and lost your faith, then you'd get there.
Yes. Yeah, we were just talking about this earlier. If a church plant doesn't make it in 5 years, that's not a failure. If the church planter falls because of a moral situation, that's a failure. If the marriage falls apart, that's a failure. But if a church plant doesn't make it, there's faithfulness in there. Am I growing closer to Jesus through this process? Am I falling more in love with my spouse through this process? Am I growing in a love for the church, the body of Christ, the people of God through this process? Or am I becoming more bitter? Or am I gathering up more idols? If there's on my idol shelf more idols through the process of church planting, that's a failure. Yeah. Yeah.
If watching the failure of others raises the flag of, oh my gosh, I need to examine myself and bring myself before the throne of God and allow him to straighten out, change, warn, whatever it is, then it's not a failure. God never wastes this stuff.
Right. He restores the years the locusts have eaten.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. Amen. All right, anything else? What do you notice about this passage in leadership? Mark?
Yeah, I think it's none of the metaphors are about the person doing the work, right? It's like, it's your plan is easy to fall in the trap, it's like my baby.
Yeah.
But that you don't suffer as a soldier, you suffer as a soldier for your general, you don't run as a Greek soldier for yourself, you run for your city-state, you don't work as a vassal, you work for the farmer. Like, it's all about somebody else's glory. It's not about your own. I think that's maybe a kind of suffering that leaders go through is at the end.
Yeah, just counterintuitive to our culture. And that's why we lose meaning. It's because we think the meaning is us. And instead of saying we're a means to an end, God's greater glory. Yeah, so the purpose is bigger than us. We mentioned this in a sermon a little bit ago. If you have nothing to die for, you have nothing to live for. And if the only thing that you're living for is yourself, that's not a life, you're already dead. Yeah, purpose beyond self. Love it. This is why church planting is fun. This is great. I mean, this is awesome. This right here, this is like 3 stars right here. It's the purpose is beyond self. Yeah.
Just
Mm.
To just share what you've received. And there's not a lot about going out and getting. It's more about receiving grace and receiving suffering.
Mm.
To me, it's a place of rest. It's a place of, confidence in God. It's not yourself.
Yeah. Receiving. The posture is receiving, which is fitting for as we come forward to the communion table. Yeah, Kevin, we'll go this way. Yeah. Okay. Then we'll move up here. Yeah. So what's that Chinese proverb? If you have a vision for a year, plant wheat. If you have a vision for 10 years, plant a tree. If you have a lifetime vision, plant a person. Something like that, yeah. It's about people, yeah.
Soldiers mentioned a few times, and that sort of gives the implication that you're going to be fighting some battles, perhaps some spiritual battles.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I was looking at the word entangled. Entangled with civilian affairs. Leaders have to be careful with their purposes and not getting entangled with distractions.
Okay. Can I put focus? Yeah. Okay. What do you not see in here in regards to leadership?
It's all up to you.
Yeah.
I think it's important is that it implies that the team.
Yeah.
Implies you're immersed yourself in other people along the journey with you.
Yes. What's your name again? I'm sorry.
Peter.
Peter. Yeah, Peter asked me during the break. He says, what's the bare minimum for planting a church? I would say two, not one, for that reason. Yeah, that's great observation. What is it not? We'll have a couple of these, and we'll keep moving. Oh, glam. I don't know how to spell it. So there's a lot of vowels in there. I'm not sure where they fit. Nathaniel.
It's not clear exactly what's being. There's an invitation to reflect on all of this. You need to mull over some of these images to get the insight.
Play that out again. Yeah. Okay, so it's not
immediately clear.
Yeah. Yeah, who is the athlete? Are they a pole vaulter, a basketball player? Who's the soldier? Is it a Air Force? I don't know all the different terms I should, but airmen, yeah. All right. Okay. Leadership. At the bottom of the page, in our current North American context, there are two primary ways of gaining leaders. So if you're thinking about, okay, we want to plant a church, and we've already talked about what a leader or who the kind of person that we are looking for is and what this is not, but there's two primary ways of gaining a leader for the purpose of church planting. And I would say this, in talking to other network leaders that in regards to church planting, including Acts 29, which is one of the big dogs, planting churches, they would say this, the most difficult part of planting churches is find leaders to plant churches. That's the number one issue. It's the biggest pinch point for planting churches is to find the right kind of person to plant the churches. It's the most difficult. That's why it's so important to have a robust leadership pipeline. We're going to get to that in just a bit. There's two primary ways of gaining leaders. The first is the free agency model. Most people in our congregation come from this model, which means we are building on a foundation that was laid by someone else. That is to say this, we're going outside of our congregation, we're going outside of our immediate context to find a leader and bring them into our context, prepare them, and then send them. So they're not in our immediate church, they're not homegrown, it's free agency. They're looking for a new team to play with, and we're looking for a new player to hire, and so free agency. There are positives to this. They're instant servers, they're instant tithers, they're ready-made participants, they're ready-made leaders. What else? They come ready. It's fast.
Experience.
They're experienced? Yes, absolutely. Big pool of what? Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And oftentimes, especially if we're getting a church planter from outside of our context, they have relationships with other people that are like them who are also highly qualified in another context that we could pull in. So networking, it increases our networking capacity. And there's also downsides. They could be heretical. They could have an incomplete polity. They have a hardened DNA. In other words, one of the important things when we're bringing on somebody is to recognize not only their character and competency, but also their chemistry. Do they fit with our family? Chemistry is an essential C. And oftentimes it gets overlooked. Is this person capable, competent? Absolutely. Do they have a godly character? Well, we think so. Do they fit? Well, we'll see. And oftentimes what happens is the reason why something falls apart is not because of competency, sometimes because of character, but it's oftentimes because of chemistry. It's just not the right chemistry fit. When they're a free agent, we don't know that. So the farm team model is the second model. Cultivated Christian leadership comes from a long-term, holistic vision of seeing people in process for the long haul. We're raising them up from within. There are positives. They have shared values, culture, common experience. We know what we're getting. They've been vetted over the long haul. At Wellspring, we have an internship, we have an apprenticeship, and then we have a residency. We also have second-year interns. So we could have 4 years with somebody, 5 years with somebody before we formalize their position, whether through a coordinator, director, or pastor, or as a church planter. But we've already seen that person for 4 years, which means we see their competency, we see their character. Somebody could fake us within 6 months. I mean, people can put on a face, people can do whatever, they can play the game. But you can't do that for 4 years. You just can't. You know what you're getting. But that's the farm team model. You're raising up people from within. So there's positives. There's also downsides, which are just the upsides of the other model. But it's slow, and it takes a lot of investment. So you pour yourself into this particular person, and you've invested money, you've invested time, and then they leave.
Mm-hmm. To join the free agency.
To go to the free agency model. But I would also say that's actually not a downside. It's not a bad deal. What are some other downsides of a farm team approach? Or upsides? Upsides.
An upside is you have fewer assumptions on both sides.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting and what you're getting into.
Yeah. It is good.
Dangerous to have assumptions.
Yeah, assumptions are bad. Yeah. So that would be a downside of the farm team. Yeah. Great. Great insight. Yeah.
You develop a culture that perpetuates leadership and pipeline.
Yes, culture. And that's what we've seen. There's been a lot of energy. Somebody would say, like, what's the one or two ministries that are going really well at Wellspring? And they would point to the internship. It has created an incredible amount of energy and excitement. And because of that, it's also created a particular kind of culture of leadership development. Yeah, good. Okay, obstacles to leadership development. And by the way, leadership development, I do much better at recruiting and deploying. I'm terrible at training. So that's why we're the body. We need other people who can fill in for our blind spots. But anyways, here are the obstacles of leadership development. The first is consumerism. We look for the best-looking places, best-looking products at the cheapest price. We look for churches the same way, the best place, the best product, and expects the least out of me. And that happens with leadership development. When we're coming into a leader, you could have a leader that says, I don't want to have too much expected upon me, and I want all of the benefits of being a leader. And what we have to say is, no, there's a vetting process. And in order to take responsibility, in order to take authority, there's a process in which that happens. It's a safe process. It's a process that's built into the community. But consumerism is one of the forces or the factors that we're fighting against. Number two, individualism. People idolize doing it my way. Sinatra sung a song about it. People look up at the pioneers and lone rangers who pull themselves up. And what does Paul say? Follow me as I follow Christ. How many people feel really comfortable about saying that to the people that you're discipling or mentoring? Follow me as I follow Christ. Who feels really uncomfortable saying that? Okay, maybe half. So the other half, you feel like completely comfortable saying, just follow me as I follow Christ. That's all you have to do. By the way, I forgot to say this. In our vision statement, this is going to be a side note. In our vision statement, when it says, to see followers of Jesus characterized by worship, formation, mission that renew the city and lead to a movement of new churches, the engine is discipleship, that we are about disciple making. And you can plant a church but not make disciples. You can renew a city, actually. You can see economic growth. You can see all sorts of different things, renewal dynamics taking place within a city, but not necessarily make disciples. However, if you make disciples, that's the engine that carries the freight of everything else. So leadership and discipleship are deeply or intimately connected, as we're going to see on the next page. Third obstacle to leadership development is the pastor has insecurities. We love and hate the midnight calls and asking to be visited in the hospital. We hate the inconvenience, but we need to be needed. Any twos on the Enneagram? But whether you are a two or not, there is something within us that we want to be needed. And we get the midnight call, and we have these expectations as pastors, and we think, oh, I don't like this. And at the same time, I love it. It strokes something within the ego. And so we don't like, in regards to leadership development, raising people up and then sending them out. It can play into some of our insecurities. We don't want to see somebody coming into the same amount of authority or responsibility as we do, and then releasing that person. It can be painful. So there might be some pastoral insecurities. I was meeting with somebody who is a college student, and he was talking about his internship program. These insecurities can go both ways. Either I don't want to let go, or I don't want to hang on and do the hard work of training. It can go both ways. This particular situation, he was involved in an internship program, and it was probably the worst experience that he had ever experienced in a church. And the reason being is because the church, the whole motivation for the internship was to hold on to that leader. And the expectation was is that after the internship, that they would then come onto the church and become a leader within the church. And I would say if that's the motivation for an internship, I think that that's too narrow of a motivation and too narrow of a vision for whether it's internship or apprenticeship or a residency. We have to be willing to say this, that the reason why we're doing this internship, the reason why we're doing leadership development is not so that we can hang on to leaders. It's so that when leaders leave this organization or when they leave this church, that they're going to leave better than when they came. If we don't have that conviction within our heart, there's always going to be a sense of selfishness and greed to the people that we're developing. Because the reality is we're all leaving. We're all leaving. I've been at Wellspring for 16 years. I'm going to be leaving eventually. It could be in 5 years, it could be in 50, but I'm going to die. Eventually, I'm going to leave Wellspring. We're all leaving the church that we're currently at. The question becomes is are we going to leave the people that are leaving, are they going to leave better than when they came in? That has to be the primary motivation of anything that we do in regards to leadership development. And therefore, it becomes very generous. When we're talking about developing leaders, raising up leaders, we can go in with the mindset of, hands up. I'm going to be generous. I'm going to be generous with my money. I'm going to be generous with my time. And I'm going to be generous in regards to leadership development. Okay. We got to keep going. Leadership and discipleship have to go together. And the next few images I did steal from 3DM, and I think they're really helpful in regards to understanding the importance of leadership development. So there was a reveal study that Willow Creek put out. Is anybody familiar with that? The reveal study. Basically, what it was is that what they recognized is that they were, even though they had a vision for making disciples, that they weren't making disciples. And they had a number of characteristics or qualities of what discipleship looked like, and they ranked very low. And so what came out was, and Bill Hybels acknowledged, that we are having thousands of people come to the church every Sunday or Saturday night, but we're not making disciples. And it's interesting to me that Bill Hybels is one of the, when you talk about leadership in the church, he's one of the names that oftentimes comes up. strong leaders, strong leadership development. But when they looked under the hood of the church, what they realized is that while they were making great leaders, they weren't necessarily making great disciples. Okay? So, it is possible to have a church where you have great leadership and very little discipleship. It's also possible to what? Have great discipleship programs, have great discipleship, but have bad leadership. Now, let's say this. Here's our graph. Here's our 2x2. What would be the profile of a church that has strong discipleship but weak leadership development? Down in this quadrant. Strong discipleship, weak leadership. What does that look like? This is really important when it comes to church planting, by the way. Yeah, Nathaniel. Pastor-centered. It would be considered organic, maybe. Friendly, at least from their perspective. Okay, strong leadership, low discipleship. What do you have? Mega church. Okay, that's okay. It's what?
It's not repeatable. It doesn't grow organically.
Okay.
It's all hung on the leader.
Yeah. So it's maybe more system based than relational based. Systems over relationships. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, what happens when you're in this quadrant when you have leadership and discipleship? I'll just say this, you have movement dynamics. Most churches, most church plants are between 50 and 70. And the reason why is because their systems don't accommodate anything bigger than 70. Because they become pastor-centric. They're no bigger than the systems that are created. And if the only thing that you have is great relationships but no systems, then there's not a capacity or an ability to reproduce. Systems are super important. And we can see it in other venues or other areas. So if you go into a restaurant and there's bad systems, you won't go back typically. If the system is broken for the host or hostess and you're not seated for there's no one in the restaurant, there's all these open tables, and you're standing there for 45 minutes, and you're thinking, what's going on here? The problem is a systems problem. It's because they don't have a host or hostess being there to greet you and then move you to the next phase. And if you look at the way a restaurant works, I mean, there's phases. You move from here to here, from here to here, and it's clear. And if something in that system is broken, you as a customer begin to experience it. Now you may not know what that system is or where the breakdown is, but you experience it. So it is the people that are coming into our congregation. They may say it's very relational, very organic, but it's not going to grow because the reason why it's not going to grow is because there's a system issue. I would say this, that if a church is struggling to find children's ministers or children's volunteers, it's not a volunteer issue, it's a systems issue. If there's something that's going on in the church where we need more leaders, but we're not able to get more leaders, it's not a leadership issue per se, it's a systems issue. Okay? And if you just have great systems but no discipleship, you get what the Reveal study revealed, and that is a great big organization, but are people looking more like Jesus? And if we have a church, and I think this is a false dichotomy, you don't need to have either this or that, we can have both. We can be making disciples, and we can be making disciples in a system that doesn't cause it to slow down, but actually the systems facilitate greater discipleship. Okay? All right. Why leaders must have, so we need to have leadership and discipleship, they have to go together, and leaders must have both high character and high competency. If you look at the statistic down here, actually before we do that, let me just read this little paragraph. When we are looking for the right leader to plant a church, it is easy to focus on the competencies while overlooking the areas of underdeveloped character. The only way to see what is truly in a person's heart is through the pressure testing over time. The number one reason why church plants fail is because church planters fail. The number one reason why church planters fail is because church planters' marriages fail. Lifeway did a research a number of years ago. Ed Stetzer used to be at Lifeway, now he's at Wheaton. But he'll say this. He says, in all of his years, the number one reason why, and the statistics show, the number one reason why church plants fail is because church planters fail. There is nothing that pressure tests a relationship with Jesus and relationship with our spouse more than church planting. Church planting is like Miracle-Gro for idols. That's what I think that comes from Jack Miller from Surge or Sonship. I think he's the one that initially coined that. He's absolutely true. Church planting is like Miracle-Gro for our idols. If there's an idol that we're not sure about in our heart, what will reveal that more than anything is planting a church because we're exposing ourselves. All right? But we also need to, and it's very easy when we're looking at a church planter to see all of the different competencies. Man, they cast vision well. Man, they can draw a crowd. Man, they can really plant a church. I made a mistake. The church that we planted in 2015, we almost didn't have him because I was going after another leader who had a tremendous amount of capacity and competency. But later on, I got to be careful because you guys know a bit of our context. So I'm going to speak in generalities. But in terms of the character, I didn't scratch long enough to look what was underneath the surface. And by God's grace, he saved me from that particular situation. And then Tim was there, so we were able to plant that church. But it's so important to combine both character and competency. We need both. We need both. Okay? All right. Now, profiles of a church planting leader. You can look at those. Those come from, most of these are from Ridley. If you Google Ridley, 13 characteristics of a church planter, these come from him. Yeah, this is a great profile of what a church planter looks like. We're not going to spend any more time on that. Next page, how to identify and develop a church planting leader. First is recruiting. If you look at Jesus, if we look at this verse, what do we see in this? What do we notice? It's coming out of Luke chapter 5. After this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi. I'm sorry, this is Matthew. But you also see it in Peter early on in Luke chapter 5. After this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him. Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Now, based upon this passage and based upon the context, what do we know about this particular situation? What do we notice? Why do you think that was?
I think there was something in Jesus' personality that showed through that made people want to follow him.
Mm-hmm. Great observation. So when we're recruiting, we need to become the kind of person that we're recruiting. I mean, we can't expect to be... The best way to recruit is to be the kind of person that other people want to become. That's also a great observation because this is later on in Luke 5, and earlier on in Luke 5, you have Jesus healing Peter's mother-in-law. You have Jesus, healing the leper. So he's performing all of these signs, wonders, and miracles. He recruits Peter. Peter had seen those miracles, and then now he recruits Levi. Levi had to have seen those miracles as well. He knew about Jesus. Yeah. Great observation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That may have been beyond Jesus, given their context, that there was a kingdom involved. It wasn't just following Jesus, but the king. He was over the kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah. Matthew saw something more than just the money in his tax booth. Peter saw more than just the fish that were on the shore. They saw something far greater. Yes. Do we have a vision for the people that we're developing, a vision that is so much grander and greater than what they are currently seeing? Are we inviting them into a, not just a, Tim, yeah, I think it's Tim Keller. He talks about this, and we brought this up in a sermon. He doesn't just invite us into an adventure. He invites us into a quest. And an adventure is just a, you know, here, back again. An adventure is you take some pictures, you tell a story, you kind of think back, you have a memory book. But a quest, you don't return. You don't come back. Or if you do come back, you don't come back the same. Yeah. Yeah, that's critical for recruiting. Because we're also, when we're inviting a leader into what we're calling them, they're not going to get compensated very much. They're going to, the motivation has to be greater than just the compensation. Right, connecting intern?
Yeah. If we're motivated by compensation, then we'll lose the vision. We have manipulation rather than inspiration.
Yeah.
Inspiration will carry you through, and manipulation is short term and will be lost. Yeah.
Can you share, if you feel comfortable sharing about one of the conversations that you and I had about what was so compelling about Katie, what you wanted to learn from Katie as your person you're reporting to? Yeah.
So I'm in seminary, got a year and a half on my MDiv because I wanted to be a chaplain. Still discerning where and how. I think military may be a way to go. But part of my narrative is a lot of abuse in the church, and so a lot of brokenness there. And discerning, okay, Lord, you want me to go to seminary. You've planted me in this church. I really like the people of Wellspring, but if I'm going to be a chaplain, part of that will be ordination at some point. So am I Anglican, right? That's the question. As I'm writing the cover letter for this internship, I think, okay, Lord, what is it that I write here? What is my why for applying for this internship? And the thing that I feel like is coming out of this conversation with God is Katie Gale, our connecting pastor, she loves the church.
Mm.
She loves the church. In my brokenness and my pride and in my pain and all of that, I don't love the church. I love the people. I'm down with programs. I'm invested. I've been here 3 years. But I don't really know that I love the church 6 months ago before I take this internship. Why am I applying for this internship? What am I putting on this cover letter? I want to love the church like Katie Gale loves the church. I'm not there yet. But as I apply for this internship in hopes of getting it, that's the outcome that I'd like to walk out of this process. That's the reason why.
Mm.
How that looks, what that articulates, I don't know. I wrote in the cover letter, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'll show up to the stuff, and I'll give it my best shot. But that's why I'm applying to this. And that's the inspiring thing. I don't really care about the money. Thank you. but that's why I applied, because I want to love the church like Katie Gale loves the church. And at some point, go out for lunch and say, hey, Katie, why do you love the church? And now our questions and our conversations have moved beyond just that why to how does that articulate itself in that. But yeah,
that's exactly it, man. Yeah.
And can I follow up with that? Just with a question. So like when Jesus calls the disciples, they're not the most competent. I mean, their competencies, right, are lacking some. And
Judas was really competent.
Their character, Judas's character, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
They all run, right, on the 90th train. So I think that's a great example. Like, so what is it exactly? How do we, if we're looking for competency and character, and yet we're not looking for maybe absolutely completed competent characters, you know, is desire alone enough? Like, what is the... How do you negotiate that as you're a kid? What's the measurement for that?
That's great. So going back to the statement of we want to see people when they're sent better than when they came in. And speaking of church planting, when they come into like the beginning of the leadership development pipeline, they're not going to be competent. They're not going to be competent in a million different ways. But that's the responsibility of the person in charge to bring them to the place where they are competent. And I think that's where the other C comes in, is calling and really investigating, is this person called? But that's good. I mean, like, you're right. The disciples weren't competent. But 3 years later, they were extremely competent, not only because they walked with Jesus, because they had the spirit of Jesus, the same spirit that raised Christ from the dead, living inside of them. So they did have the resources, and they were competent 3 years later. But it takes 3 years at least. At least. At least. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Ryan. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. What kind of person are we recruiting? And this is this goes into this because these are developing. I mean, these are all developing. But the four C's are character, competency, chemistry, and calling. The kind of person that we want to recruit has high character, competency, chemistry, and calling. Now we're going to build into that. We're going to develop that person. But in terms of the kind of person that we're looking for, yes, that they have a desire to grow in these four areas.